Okay, Tom Banks, well, told me that he would that he would introduce. You're just tunneling through. Okay. So Tom Banks told me that he would introduce me, but look at him. He tried to, well, to go in the landscape, and what happened? Okay. So today I would like to touch several different topics, and I must say that, well, when I tried to prepare my transparencies, there was such a huge number of them, so I decided to divide it in three parts, then they grow again. I should warn that some of what I told you, I'm going to tell you, I already told in two lectures here, 1 hour each, so you can find it on the video, so those who don't want to watch me now, they can just go to the computer. But there will be some news there also. So first of all, there will be some, well, points. Some of it is based on points of view, because all of us, well, we more or less all understand what inflation is, but some of us understand it slightly differently. So I will try to show my perspective on it. Then I will tell something about stochastic approach to inflation and tunneling. And as I say, most of this thing is right now on the web. So I will rush through it. And there will be some details, some comments about eternal inflation. Then I will, well, start moving in the direction which is riskier and riskier and sleepier for me, up to this point where you will not trust me and I will not trust me. But the beginning of the talk will be absolutely correct. So let's start with inflation, because everybody knows what inflation did, right? This homogeneity, isotropy, flatness, etc., etc. So let me just zoom on one of these issues to explain that things are not that simple and that transparent as they could seem in the, well, at the first glance. So let me start with example number one, just comparing how different versions of inflation deal with these issues. For example, chaotic inflation. In fact, it's the simplest version of chaotic inflation. The word chaotic, I introduce it in order to say that in different parts of the universe, scalar field initially could take any value without any, well, relation to thermal equilibrium or anything. So it could be any potential. It's just the simplest one. So if you take the simplest potential, the inflation may start with a density as high as Planckian density. It may start in the closed universe, for example, with the smallest possible size, 10 to the minus 33 centimeters as Planckian size, or stringy size, whatever largest you allow me, smallest you allow me to work with. If it is a Planckian size, then the total mass, initial mass of the universe is 10 to the minus 5 grams. Usually people cite masses related to Grand unification. There is no reason for that. It's 10 to the minus 5 grams is sufficient for, well, means Planckian mass, sufficient to ignite the whole universe. And then it starts being eternally inflating. Now, the total initial entropy of this universe may be as small as 1. It just does not have any information whatsoever sitting there. So when we are talking about information, unitary evolution, and everything, that's where you start. You start with entropy equal to 1. And that's how you solve by this scenario, this entropy flatness problem, because you start with this entropy and you get entropy 10 to the 90, what we see right now. So this is a solution. Now, if it is eternal, to which I'm coming later, then this is the best way of using eternal inflation, because here the scale field can jump near the Planckian density. It will be below Planckian density, but it can come as close as you want. And as I will argue, that's very important for justifying the anthropic principle in strongest form. Now, one general comment on this inflation and others is that usually the main idea of inflation, why it allows us to solve so many different problems, and why it allows us to use this causal patch, is that nothing depends on the initial conditions. Very, very soon, initial conditions become completely forgotten. And nothing depends on boundary conditions there. Also, for the same reason, the universe becomes exponentially large. And in this sense, inflation by its spirit is different or even opposite to what is called holographic principle. It does not mean that holographic principle cannot be useful. It is useful. It just, when you try to use, this weapon everywhere, it's just like using anthropic principle to predict everything. There are limits of applicability of either of these principles, either holographic or anthropic, and we should know these limits when we apply it to cosmology. Now, example number two, how the same things happen in new inflation. Well, in fact, it is chaotic inflation now, it's not new inflation. There is no thermal beginning, and I will return to this later. But if we take chaotic inflation with the potential of this type, we can call it new inflation. And in this theory, inflation begins in the domain which must be approximately a million times larger than Planckian size. Its total mass must be approximately the mass of the Schwarzenegger. And the entropy is 10 to the 9. So just think about the probability of spontaneous creation of Schwarzenegger in this room, and you will see that this is not exactly the best solution of the flatness problem or whatever. Okay. Now, it goes better if you add inflation, eternal inflation to it. Because then who cares how it was created, because then it goes on forever. Well, so if you have eternal inflation, that's nice. But now let me nevertheless return to some term.
Do you really think it's not eternal?
No, it is eternal. But it is just like with a fire in the forest. When somebody started fire in the forest, fire in the forest just spread, and then nobody cares who started it. Well, some care. But if you do not have matches, then it just does not work. So the question is whether we are absolutely sure that everything that can happen eventually happen. And if you compare how easily it happens in the new inflation and in chaotic inflation, then the comparison goes with the numbers like that. The probability for the universe to materialize according to what we with Vilenkin think is something like that. It is given by this number. So if you have two competing theories nearby, then chaotic inflation starts because it's not suppressed. New inflation eventually will start too. So it is not a bad thing if you are sure that things like that are really valid. So it is almost as good. But to convince myself that this scenario is almost as good takes a little bit of faith, which I have, of course. Now, historically, new inflation was introduced as a result of supercooling in the process of high-temperature phase transitions after the hot Big Bang. This was the definition of new inflation, which I gave to this scenario many years ago. And when people discuss whether new inflation is dead or not, then they discuss different versions of what it is. So this new inflation in this particular form, I think, is most definitely dead. I never seen anything like that working right now. We're working right now with different ideas, not with the phase transitions, not with supercooling. Does not mean that you cannot do it, it's just nobody have it. Now the final version, just like absolute limit, and that's what I call cyclic inflation, because it's also inflation, no jokes. You have here density which is 10 to the minus 120 of the Planckian density, and you have inflation, and this is the stage of inflation that solves the flatness, horizon, and homogeneity, etc. problem, except for it does it before the Big Bang, but before our Big Bang. So it explains flatness of our universe by the previous stage of inflation. So when people say that cyclic scenario is alternative to inflation, I always wonder how inflation can be alternative to inflation. Now, but what is going on here? Inflation here begins in the domain of initial size approximately our 10 to the 28 centimeters. The universe at that time must have already mass 10 to the 55 gram, and the total entropy 10 to the 88. So in this sense, this scenario does not solve neither flatness, mass, nor entropy problems. So it solves some others, like homogeneity. But you should understand which ones it does solve and which one it doesn't. So this was the first brief excursus in what different models of inflation capable or uncapable, or half capable of explaining. Now, let me move further, and here I'm going to the issue of quantum fluctuations. Because this issue already has been discussed by many people, I'm just briefly mentioning what is going on there. When the wavelengths of quantum fluctuations over scalar field in the vacuum becomes larger than the horizon, then this fluctuation frees, then on the top of it another one frees, then on the top of it other frees, and you get inhomogeneous distribution of classical scalar field. Why I'm saying classical? Well, it's actually quantum, but the occupation numbers of the particles sitting in these waves, they grow exponentially. So for all practical purposes, you can treat them like semi-classical or classical, whatever field. Before this approach to inflation was developed, we really had problems describing quantum processes in an inflationary universe. And the basic features of this approach have been invented by Starobinsky, and then everything well went to to the proper places. And how do we study a situation like that? How do we study the value of the scalar field at a given point? So scalar field jumps here, spreads, then on the top of it something else jumps, spreads, and on this scale h minus 1, on the scale of causal patch, you always have like homogeneous situation all the time because of stretching. But this process just goes on and goes on, and each time this amplitude either jumps up or jumps down, so it looks like Brownian motion. In addition to Brownian motion, because of quantum jumps, this field also rolls if there is any force. So for example, you have effective potential and a scalar field rolls down, okay? So in order to study this, you must write down equation for Brownian motion in the external force. Well, this was equation which Starobinsky have written for that, and this is a basis of stochastic approach to inflation. And now this equation has a very, very interesting solution. This equation, let's just start looking for the simplest solutions. This is a complicated equation. P is a probability distribution to find a field phi at a given point. Point, that's important, not the volume, but the point at a given moment of time. Hubble, you know what is Hubble, whatever, V, okay. So this is derivative with respect to the field phi, and this is time derivative. And now let's assume that eventually everything comes to a state of like thermal equilibrium, like thermal bath, and that's similar to what Lenny discussed at the previous talk. So what is going on? You can really solve this equation. I mean, obtain honest-to-God solution. Just drop this term saying that it is equal to zero and solve it. It is a simple, solvable equation, and you find the solution of this equation. And this solution is very interesting. It consists of two parts. The first part describes you the probability to find a universe with a given value of the scalar field phi at a given moment of time now. Okay, so in the end of the process, well, during inflation, but in the end of the process, after all of these thermalizers, etc. This one describes you the, you see, diffusion equations, you can solve them forward in time, and you can solve them backward in time. This is called forward and backward Kolmogorov equations. So if you solve them backward in time and try to find out what is the most probable state from which your point came here to the field phi, then the solution of this will be given by that. So this is the most probable initial condition, and this is the most probable final condition. And if you look at this carefully, you'll find out, first of all, that this is equal to the square of the Hartley-Hawking wave function, except for the interpretation of this is opposite. They interpret it as a probability of quantum creation of the universe, which is what this well expression gives you. And yes, this is the tunneling, so the square of the tunneling wave function, which Vilenkin and I and several other people prefer. Okay, so just these two wave functions sit in the same place. But just one second, what is important? This is correct. If you have thermal equilibrium, that's important because if, for example, what was the condition? The condition was you're all the time with all of these values of scalar field phi, you are in a kind of thermal equilibrium, which is possible when masses of the scalar fields are always smaller than the Hubble constant. Of course, in our universe, you have a lot of scale field masses, which are much larger than the Hubble constant. In fact, we probably will not find, I don't know, any scalars which have mass smaller than Hubble constant. So this equation does not work for the description of our part of the universe. You need to replace it by something. If you want to study a stationary solution, then you need to do something else. Well, what is possible? Instead of studying the probability to find a field at a given point, at a given time, instead of that, you want to study the fraction of a volume of the universe at a given value of the scale field phi at a given time, but the fraction of the volume. And what is important here, that this one shows the preference for the smallest possible values of effective potential. The smaller v, the larger probability that you are sitting there. That's just natural, you're falling down, okay? But if you take into account self-reproduction of the universe, and that's eternal inflation, etc., then you have a possibility to jump high, and then you get paid for, even though the probability will be very small, but you get compensated for that by the exponentially rapid expansion of the universe. So then you can study different probability distribution, the probability distribution to find a given field phi and a given volume. So you are interested in the fraction of a volume. By the way, before I switch to that, it is interesting to take a logarithm of this probability distribution, because the logarithm of the probability distribution is the entropy. So that's how you can get entropy of De Sitter space without any tricks with Euclidean quantum gravity, which may be leading, may be misleading, but in this case I know how to get it. And what is interesting also, that this expression is valid for any number of scalar fields. I just add all scalar fields with different values of effective potentials, and the total effective potential of all the scalar fields sits there. So when people say, what will happen with the entropy of De Sitter space if there are many fields? So these equation remains valid for that. Now, what is also interesting, that the probability, the change of this, well, this probability distribution can be also related to the probability of tunneling. I am sitting in one space and I am drawing motion upwards, and then when I draw in motion upwards, then I just fall down, and this is the probability of tunneling from the point phi to the point phi zero, which suggests that I can use this expression for the probability which I've written all the, and Lenny have written quite often. This is e to the delta s. But here is a caveat, you should be very careful. For example, if you are interested in the probability of tunneling to this region, what is delta s that you put here? Well, you must first climb the mountain. Okay, so this will be delta S here. It is not that you have this probability distribution from here to here, just put here this effective potential with this field. So you should use it, but you should use it carefully. Okay, now what is interesting about this delta S is this delta S, just like S itself, the whole expression here, it becomes of the order of 1 when effective potential is of the order of Planckian, you see? So when we are near the Planckian density, then the jumps becomes unsuppressed. So you can easily jump, there is no suppression for the jumps, and that is why if you have chaotic inflation, you can easily have Planckian length jumps, and that is why it is easy to justify entropic principle in this case, because you jump from one minimum to another freely. If on the other hand, you have new inflation, or whatever other inflation with even smaller energy density, then these jumps become first exponentially suppressed, and second, sometimes they may be just plain impossible, because sometimes you cannot climb to high mountains. So this is another reason why I was so excited about chaotic inflation and eternal inflation in it, because it allows you this justification of entropic principle much more easier. Example is supersymmetric SU5. If you have several different minima here and new inflation, then perturbations produced by new inflation will be just somewhere here, which may be enough to tunnel from one place to another, but that's a problem to study. If you have chaotic inflation, then these jumps just push you any direction, because the distance here is much smaller than Planckian, and then eventually you hang up in one of these minima, and that's why we are in this SU3 cross U2 cross U1. Well, now what's interesting also that we have studied the model where which allows two different types of compactification, d equal 4 and d equal 6. And what we have found possible, decompactification from D4 to D6 is easy, and this goes on locally. So the universe, if it starts in D equal 4, then it is easily become a collection of D equal 4 and D equal 6. We did not find a way how to compactify it back, but maybe what Lenny says may help to compactify it back. Anyway, what I'm saying that this stochastic approach to inflation allows us to describe the universe which consists of different parts, and that's what I call this Kandinsky universe, showing you how different parts of it may be. And now we can study it not only on a computer, but really, well, study the, and here I hesitate to say, the probability distribution. I really want to study the fraction of the volume, and whether this is a probability distribution or not, I do not know. I just know that I have this set of bubbles, and I want to study this set of bubbles. So I can cut it by this set of hypersurfaces just to see the image, how many red and blue I have in different parts. Or I can cut it differently, I may get different distributions, but these distributions allow me to understand what is going on. What was interesting, that if I decide to find out the fraction of the volume of all parts of the universe which began their evolution in some initial field phi, and then what is the fraction of the volume which sits at this field phi at the time t, it can be shown, and this was done in our paper with Arthur Mezhlouman about 10 years ago, it can be shown that in many theories, not in all, but in many theories, this probability distribution factorizes. So the first factor, usually, at least for sufficiently small values of the field phi zero, is given by this exponent of quantum creation of the universe from nothing, which was actually a surprise for us. We did not get, we did not understand for a long time why we are again getting it here. And then another probability distribution, which does not have anything to do with Hawking Hartley probability distribution, you should calculate it. And then another one, which is fractal dimension multiplied by the largest possible Hubble constant, which is given by inflation, multiplied by t. So this probability distribution teaches us something. The whole universe grows not with the speed with which we are right now expanding, but with the speed of the fastest growing part of the universe. And the meaning of this is the following. Right now, there are some parts of the universe which are sitting near the Planckian density. They expand with Planckian speed. And they produce babies of our type, okay? So these babies may grow slow, but their fathers and mothers, they just grow with this Planckian speed. That is why the total size of the universe grows like that. And my initial idea when I studied this was maybe there are some parts which grow faster than another. And even in, well, my paper in Physics Today in 87, I have said maybe we should study Darwinian approach to cosmology, mutations, and fastest who which grow, then they win. So what happens here? The faster growers, they produce, well, these slow movers. So this like socialistic society when people... I'm sorry, I didn't expect to get it, but that's what I get. Okay. So this is this picture, and when I'm looking at this picture, which tells you that the average number of red and blue and green remains the same, and then dimension of different parts of the universe may be different, I would like to ask where we are on this tree. And we could be here, and we could be here, and we could be in the first bubble, okay? So what is the probability for us to be at the first bubble if there are infinitely many bubbles here? Well, probably the probability is kind of very small. What is the probability for us to live here at the distance 1 or 10 or 20 billion years before, well, after the first bubble? Well, here will be only finite number of domains, and infinite number of domains will be higher. So the expectation value for the distance from us to the Big Bang will be infinitely large. Then how does it fit with the discussion which we had yesterday, saying that inflation is eternal only in the future and not in the past? And here I should say that we do not disagree with Alan on this. We just formulate it slightly differently. inflation along each particular geodesic in the eternal inflation scenario ends. So if you take any particular geodesic, like any particular observer, after a given amount of time, he just stops inflating because there is an average drift of him down to the minimum of the potential. However, we call inflation future eternal if and only if there is no upper bound on the proper duration of inflation along all geodesicals. So if we find some geodesicals where inflation continues eternally, these geodesicals give the main contribution to the volume of the universe, and we call inflation eternal. So inflation eternal in the future definition is if we do not have upper bound on the proper time of the length of inflation geodesical in the future. What Alan have proven yesterday, and that was pretty interesting and important theorem, that inflation along each particular geodesic is not past eternal, which is exactly what we know about future eternity. However, there is absolutely no statements about the upper bound of duration of inflation in the past along all geodesicals, and that is what Alan also said. And in this sense, there are no information whether inflation is past eternal or not. Okay, now I will go into something which I understand much less. And maybe you understand much better, and maybe we will come to some thermal equilibrium. And that is about tunneling after eternal inflation. So for example, we're already downstairs, we are stuck in this stringy landscape for a while, and maybe we can return back to these glorious years where we're still expanding, because Hawking Moss tunneling, for example, thermal distribution, and you can jump upwards. Of course, it's suppressed, the probability is suppressed, but we have eternity, so why not? Let us study Coleman-DeLucia formalism. And I've learned a lot when I've studied it, and I'm not sure that I've learned it right, but well, let me tell you what I've learned about it. So here is the false vacuum, here is the true vacuum, it may be at non-zero value of the effective potential. It better be if we want to return back in this way. Now, let me see what will happen, how I describe the tunneling of this field through the barrier. Well, the standard theory is that, well, I should rotate this thing like that, and I study how this body falls down in Euclidean space in the inverted potential, solve these equations for that. What is interesting, what does not appear written in many places which treat this Coleman-DeLucia potentials, if you study this in the thin wall approximation, you really don't notice it. If you study it in a thin wall approximation, you start near the false vacuum and you go here. And that is why it is called false vacuum decay. But if you do honest job on a computer, then you find out that you are not starting at the false vacuum and you are not going to the true vacuum. You're just doing, well, it's the best way you could. And you just really, in order to check it, you solve these Coleman-DeLucia equations. This is taken from our paper with Bossa. We have found some Coleman-DeLucia instanton and something which we call double bubble, and then double anti-bubble, or whatever. So this interesting thing. You solve equations simultaneously for the scalar field and for the metric on the instanton. And for the metric on the instanton, it's like a closed universe which appears and then disappears, and this is the end of the story. You must fit your solution to it. What do you do after you solve this equation? Well, that's approximately how it looks. This is a part which says, I started at the initial point, I'm solving Euclidean equation in this part of my manifold. I'm ending up at the final point, and this initial does not correspond to this false vacuum state, and this final does not correspond to the true vacuum state. So why do we say that this is a decay of the false vacuum? Well, what is actually on this picture? This is Euclidean one. Then you must make an analytical continuation of this part to the upper part of it. This will be kind of De Sitter-like state. And then you must make an additional analytical continuation from this state to that state. And that is how you obtain this part, which is a bubble. Okay? So it's a bubble expanding in De Sitter space. What is this one? Well, this actually is absolutely the same. You take this, you make an expansion here, and you have another bubble in this inner space. So what is the tunneling? Where do I'm tunneling from a false vacuum to whatever? The picture can be read, this diagram can be read, because it's Euclidean time. You look at it in any possible direction, just like Hawking demonstrated us. I can, well, look forward in time or backward in time. So what is possible? You can interpret it two different ways. First, you have bubble of like open universe bubble, which reaches this phi initial with the field inside it, reaches phi initial, then there is a tunneling, and then a bubble which starts at phi final, and then it's an open universe, and eventually the scalar field there relaxes. And in this bubble, this field begins in the false vacuum. But now the process looks extremely weird. You must construct the bubble, this open universe, shrinking in spherically symmetric way, in such a way as to bring us to phi initial. This really does not make any sense. I mean, this process is possible geometrically. This is a consistent interpretation of Kalman-DeLucci instanton, but you know that nature would not work this way. Then another possibility is that Kalman-DeLucci instanton, in fact, describes quantum creation from nothing of two open universes. That's exactly what Hawking and Turek were doing. They have studied this quantum creation from nothing using, well, the famous Titanic instanton, which was looking like that. You have, well, one thing which I have shown you, and another part which was this De Sitter-like, and here was a singularity. So the only difference between their picture and my picture is that we do not have any singularity here. We just really have two open universes created. So if anybody is still interested in creation of two open universes, then you can do it non-singular way without any problems how you beat the singularity. But it is still not what we wanted, because we wanted tunneling rather than universe creation. That's what you can do. You can deform Kalman-DeLucci instanton. You can take the south pole or north pole, however you call it, of the instanton, and you just bend it by hand. Well, this is a bad idea, to bend solutions by hand, but maybe not that bad, because what you need when you have a configuration and you calculate the action of configuration, then all configuration which have action different from the true instanton by delta S smaller than 1, all of them are legitimate. Okay? That's one of these principles. The reason why we consider semi-classical trajectories is because we did not want to have regular deviations by more than that. So it's possible to do so. But then, if we do so and try to bend this Kalman-DeLucci instanton, we will find that the price we are paying, this deviation of delta S from 1, is always larger than the jump which the scalar field make from this false vacuum to the initial position to the degree 4. I will not, prove it right now. You can see it on, see, here is what I'm saying. I'm saying that if this jump is larger than 1, then I cannot justify this trick, because it is a dirty trick, but at least this is best, or maybe not exactly best, but...
Is that the same as saying that the gap is bigger than the Fermi field?
No. I'm saying that I can bend my instantons, but only up to some limit. And in particular, if I have Hawking-Moss instanton, which is the instanton which is the heart of this thermal story of thermal distribution and everything, I can really justify this Hawking-Moss answer if I have slow roll all the time, every piece of quasi-De Sitter space in the thermal equilibrium with its neighbor. Then all the time you have Brownian motion and everything goes thermal equilibrium at every moment. But if I do not have it, and that we do not have, for example, in KKLT construction, then what do? You use this Kalman-DeLucci instanton solution and you do not make any sense of it, because it is not an interpolating solution. So you can make it interpolating by bending it. By this bending is possible only if the length of the jump is smaller than 1. So this seemed to be not such a big deal if you study, for example, theories like SU5. Well, who cares? The jump is small, so you should not really worry much about that. You can use Coleman-DeLucci for that. But if you study a tunneling through, for example, exponentially, through, well, inflationary barriers, then typically when you have, for example, the simplest model of what Allen now called new inflation, theoretical like that, then this inflation works here only if the distance from here to here is much larger than M Planck, few times larger than M Planck. So if I'm sitting here and I want to jump here, I am doing illegitimate thing if I am, well, kind of cutting this instant on this way. Does it mean that we have really impenetrable barriers in landscape if we have inflationary barriers like that? Well, at first it seemed to me that yes, this is the case, but then of course nature can invent many different tricks to overcome this difficulty, and I think that one of the things was mentioned to me just before my talk by Tom Banks, and maybe what I'm going to tell is equivalent to that, I don't exactly know. Consider causal patch. Okay, and that is the first and the last time I'm mentioning it, because usually it's very harmful. But sometimes if you do not have any better weapon than that, then you just take anything that lies in the road. So here it is, this causal patch. Now, what is the temperature in this causal patch? Is Hubble constant determinant of the height of the potential here? Okay. So you always have a possibility of thermal jump of the scalar field, or the change of energy of the scalar field in this place, even though there is no thermal equilibrium between this and that. It's just like impenetrable wall, there is no thermal equilibrium all the way, but there is thermal equilibrium here. So there is a small tiny temperature here, and in order for you to jump upwards, you must spend some energy. And this energy is not that like you go slightly higher, you have a higher temperature also, energy grows, well, decreases, temperature grows, but instead of that you must achieve everything at one spot, you make one huge jump and wind up here. And depending on what you believe is a reasonable thing, you can have two estimates, and I really don't know which one is better right now. Probably this one is slightly better. But you find that it is possible within this domain of a finite size, have this thermal fluctuation upwards, except for it will not be given by this equation e to the m Planck to the fourth divided by effective potential. It will be given by a more complicated expression, but it will not be zero. Now, why is it important? It is important because then I will say, okay, even though my naive thermal estimates would not work, there is still a possibility for me to jump upwards. Then I fall down and I'm over the barrier. And that's not the end of the story. The end of the story will happen right now when I will say something even more outrageous than that. Because I am going, you see, demolishing Coleman-DeLucci, going again. I have already 2 minutes. It is enough for me to create the universe in laboratory. Usually it takes 10 to 43 seconds. Okay. So can we actually jump even from the floor? Like even from zero cosmological constant, where no temperature at all. Well, why do we need temperature if we have quantum mechanics? Because quantum fluctuations also are possible, okay? So why don't we really check what are the conditions that are necessary for us to create a part of de Sitter space in a laboratory? And now I should say from the beginning, what I am studying right now is a probability to create a part of de Sitter space. And I will not answer the question whether this de Sitter space will be expanding or collapsing, okay? Now, that's nevertheless, if I created a part of de Sitter space, then it's a possibility to Allen and to Polchinski study what is the probability for tunneling of this part of de Sitter space to a part which will be exponentially expand. Let me just nevertheless try to estimate the probability to create a part of de Sitter space from vacuum here. So what is necessary? In the simplest theory, like lambda phi to the fourth, I want to produce quantum fluctuations which will be sufficiently long length so that the length will be larger than the horizon. the scale field must be larger than inflationary. Inflation happens here when field phi in the simple model is larger than M Planck. And of course, I can use other models. I get different estimates. It is not crucial for me that I must play with F phi larger than M Planck. I can do the same in hybrid inflation scenario just for simplicity. But the size of the region must be larger than Hubble constant self-consistently calculated on top of these fluctuations. So let me do the job. Phi squared average on the scale which must be larger than inverse Hubble constant. This is from zero to h, integral of quantum fluctuations. It must be, cut on the momentum h. So it is essentially h squared up to the coefficients. H squared in this model is lambda phi to the fourth, effective potential, divided by M Planck squared. So this means that the probability of this jump, if I'm using simple assumption that at least in the first approximation I just treat it like Gaussian field, then the probability is minus phi squared, the amplitude of jump that is required, divided by two dispersions, okay? And so I substitute here phi squared, I substitute here by this thing, and I get M Planck squared divided by lambda phi squared. And for inflation to start, I need this field phi to be larger than M Planck, so M Planck cancel with M Planck, and I see the probability for you to create the universe in a laboratory while sitting just in the Minkowski space and getting these jumps. And now what is the good news? If I make it in a hot can, then this probability even grows. So when I want to produce a universe locally using, thermal fluctuations, then I can enhance it, and then I will surely know where this universe is produced. And there are some estimates. I will not give any derivations. These derivations can be found in my paper in 91. Well, this paper had the title, Hard Art of the Universe Creation, and the referee forced me to change the title because he thought that, religious people will be angry at me. So the main idea is that you have a vacuum, then you have a universe which dispatched from our universe, and then it starts expanding in all directions, and I don't see any consequences. So I guess I overused my time. The only thing that bothered me when I start thinking about it, why? I mean, why do I need to do it if it is so small that I cannot jump through it because this thing is evaporating? Why do I spend my resources creating the universe from nothing? Because I cannot take energy of it, the energy conservation, I cannot take minerals from it, useless. Okay? So the only use, and I will just explain, the only use I was able to find is to send a message to those people who will live in this universe after us. I mean, they will go to the seminar studying string theory and we already learned something. So why don't we send a message to these people? But unfortunately, even if we write something on the surface of the universe will be inflating, so the people will live for billions of years in the corner of one letter. They will never read the message. The only way to send the message would be to create this universe in some particular vacuum state, and which are now provided to us by string theory. So if you create the universe in such a vacuum state that electron mass will be equal to the proton mass, will be equal to mass of the W boson and everything, it will be just one bit of information. So this will be not a useful message. If, however, you create the universe where the mass of the electron is 2,000 times smaller than the mass of the proton, which is 100 times smaller than the mass of the W boson, you read it, okay? You understand? So the question is whether our universe was created by chance, whether it was entropic principle that guides us, or whether the bizarre universe we live in is a result of the, kind of basement experiment by a physicist hacker. Thank you.
Very nice. Any questions about basement experiments?
Why do you need Pullman instanton if you have the sitter instanton for creation of the universe from nothing? As far as I understand, Pullman-Deruchy instanton you need it just to describe tunneling. Okay, when you have bubbles.
For creation of the universe from nothing. This was not what I've studied. I've studied the tunneling from pre-existing de Sitter to another de Sitter. Then I have two choices. One normal de Sitter instanton, which is Hawking-Moss instanton. Another Coleman-Delucci instanton. Depending on the parameters of the theory, one can be much easier to produce than another. And I really know the criterions. Sometimes one beats another, sometimes another beats one. Okay, and sometimes Coleman-Delucci instantons plane do not exist. And this was one of the reasons why I started studying it, because for it was emerged after our discussions with Lenny Susskind. You see, sometimes you can prove a theorem that you cannot jump from de Sitter to anti-de Sitter. Well, to the collapsing universe with negative cosmological constant, because you never jump to anti-de Sitter, you jump to collapsing geometry. Okay, so you, sometimes you can prove a theorem that there is no Coleman-Delucci instantons, but then you can jump upwards and just fall downwards. So then in this case, de Sitter instantons may be more important.
Raphael?
It wasn't clear to me whether the creation of a universe you were describing was essentially the same process that Fari and Guth studied.
I do not think so. I think that there are several different approaches. There are Fari, Guth, Palczynski, and others, and I was the third group. Well,
the question I want to ask about it in that case is whether, as I would expect in this scenario, you have to have the new universe on the other side of a black hole. Because if that is the case, then to me it seems that it's operationally meaningless to say that you've created one.
Well,
and it's certainly impossible to send any information through it.
I'm not throwing information through the black hole. I am creating the universe under certain conditions. I can put different fluxes from outside, and the properties of the preferable vacuum state might change.
But the natural interpretation of what you have done will that you've just formed a black hole like we can do in the lab for sure.
Well, that's exactly the normal answer which Fari and Guth were fighting with. I prepared a seed for what later can become a universe. And you can prepare the seed by two different methods. One method is just to heat up the vacuum, and then you will be in the false vacuum state, and then you can just, take these temperature particles away and see what happens with that. And this was the original motivation, I think, from what Alan Guth and others did. But then there will be a question that you must take into account not only this false vacuum, but also this thermal surrounding, and I'm not sure that this was ever done. Well, what I'm doing, I'm creating this seed for the future tunneling, however, without any need of thermal surrounding.
Hi. So I'm not sure I fully followed your conclusions about the Coleman-Delucci instanton. So you showed us that you don't actually start with the initial field at the bottom
Yes.
of the well. I didn't understand. Do you always have to? Sometimes you don't have to bend the field by very much, and sometimes you do.
Yes.
So what exactly determines that? I didn't quite.
Well, what you do, you take a computer or do something smarter than that. Find out, here you take a potential, okay? You have this false vacuum, you find the instanton, brute force, and you find that it starts here and it tunnels here. So the final point does not matter, because you produce this bubble and then it goes away. But this initial point, it is different from this one. So what I'm saying that if this distance from here to here is sufficiently small, then don't worry about that.
I guess what I was asking was, does that distance depend on the height and the distance between the two minima?
Yes, of course, For example, if this barrier is extremely high, then this point becomes exponentially close to the initial one, which was the reason why nobody cared about it in the first place. Because what Coleman-Delucci, after all, did, after they constructed their theory, they analyzed it only thin wall approximation. And in a thin wall approximation, I'm sitting and tunneling from here.
Thanks.
Any other questions?
You'll talk to me privately.
One more question.
So, Andre, I'm trying to get my head around the whole, the bottom line here, and I get a feeling that you're looking at different processes with the hope of developing a sort of detailed balance picture of how all these things coexist. But I'm not sure, have you come to a conclusion yet about that, or are you just sort of counting up the different processes and
Well, I'm just saying that when you study tunneling in this landscape, so the first question is whether you can actually browse through the whole landscape. And before I talked to Tom, and before I thought myself, and before I remembered my own work from the jumping, even from Minkowski space, which I demonstrated here right now, I thought, well, if you have some inflationary barriers like that, then they will actually prevent you from doing so, which was announced in my abstract. But things change. See, people become either more clever or more stupid, I don't know yet. It's just fluctuation right now. So it looks like we can really populate the whole landscape. I do not see any obstacles of principle.
Okay.
But this population will not be simply given by this equation e to the delta s. It may be complicated in some places.
Okay, very good. Let's thank Andre again for a stimulating talk. And we'll reconvene at 2 for the afternoon session.